Hi, welcome everyone. I'd just like to open the August Council meeting for the town of Bassendean. So I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we meet, which are the Whadjuk people of the Noongar Nation, always was and always will be. I'd just like to bring people's attention to the fact that the meeting tonight, as always, is recorded and live streamed, so members of the community who may wish to make statements or questions, your contributions will also be recorded and made publicly available. Just a few announcements tonight before we get any further. Since the July council meeting, so last month, Councillor John Gangell has submitted his resignation, which was effective from Friday the 13th of August. Last week I went through some of Councillor Gangell's achievements. He'd been on council for 16 years, so that was an extensive period of time, and he made a significant contribution to the town during that period. And I'd just like to again offer our best wishes to Councillor Gangell for his future endeavours, and he will be running for a seat on council in the city of Swan in the upcoming elections, which is where he is now living. Talking about elections, with Councillor Gangell's resignation, it now means that 5 of the 7 seats on council will be vacated at the upcoming elections. The nominations open next week, so on Wednesday the 2nd of September, and they close at 4 p.m. on the 9th of September. The details around this are available on the town's website, and the town has a caretaker period, and caretaker policy, I should say, that will take effect from the close of nominations until the election. And just finally, just to remind people, particularly those who have an interest in the future of our town centre, that the consultation around the town centre master plan is currently open and will remain open till the end of August. Sort of lovely video that was made by our manager of planning in place. So the details of this consultation can be found online, and there will be a display, I believe, at this weekend's markets that will be staffed by some of our planning team if people are interested in coming along, having a chat and providing their feedback through that mechanism. So that's it for the announcements. Attendances, apologies and applications for leave. So we have all of our councillors in attendance. Is there anybody who would like to apply for a period of leave? I would like to have leave from the beginning of the caretaker period up until the election. Is there a mover to accept that? Councillor Wilson, a seconder. Councillor Hamilton, anybody against? That is carried. Next on the agenda are declarations of interest. Councillor Hamilton?
Sorry, I have a declaration of interest for item 12.6, which is a proximity interest, because my property adjoins the right-of-way, a right-of-way.
Right, is that the form? Excellent. And you'll be leaving the room when that item comes up? Excellent. Anything further? Great. We've had no requests for presentations or deputations this evening, so we'll go on to statements by members of the public. So we have, just let me find it, Mr. Drew Stratberg, present. Mr. Stratberg submitted a statement earlier, but I have the copy on my computer, so if you're still happy for me to read that out for you on your behalf, so you don't have a hard copy. So this is in relation to the draft rights of way strategy. As a resident in a newly constructed Battle Axe property that borders on the proposed right of way number 5, I cannot understand the logic behind this proposal. There are parallel roads less than 100 metres either side of the proposed right of way, and creating a laneway will only cause the following, a landway will only cause the following foreseeable issues: increased morning traffic congestion due to right-hand turns, potential for increased criminal activity in the laneway due to vehicle access providing greater mobility for violent break-ins and thievery, increased noise pollution for existing neighbours, decreased market value of properties for existing property owners with battle axe configurations, potential building code violations due to proposed land reacquisition. This would be the case for our property, as we are built currently on the legal limits, and reclaiming our land would not only devalue our property but eliminate what little backyard we retain, cause noise pollution, and essentially have a road on our doorstep. The proposal itself appears to be 10 to 15 years too late, as one can see from the aerial shots that approximately 50% of the laneway properties at either side have already been subdivided under battle axe configuration. The proposal offers no benefit to existing property owners under such circumstances, but does impose financial and social costs unnecessarily. A more logical solution that is more cost-effective is to close the laneway and offer the existing laneway to be purchased by the various landowners by land gate at market value. This would be my absolute preference, given we purchased the land, made the relevant inquiries of the council and built on a battle axe block in the past 18 months, and no mention of this proposal occurred, and we were told that the lane would not be developed. So I understand you have a follow-up question in a minute when we get to public question time.
The statement essentially covers it all.
Okay. Great, thank you. Is there anybody else who'd like to make a statement? Yes, Mrs. Saddell.
Surprise. Hi, it's Carol Sardle from 55 Broadway, Bassendean. I have to say that this proposal to turn our lane into a road is about 25 years too late. We bought this property in 1993 at 55 Broadway. And over that period of time, we've seen lots of houses built on back blocks. So I find it really hard to believe that it's now okay to turn the lane, if that's what you want to call it, into what we call a road. And I think our neighbour next door at number 57A really summed it up, said, oh, well, does it mean that we're going to be building a bitumised road so the crooks can go up the lane and get away from the police? And I can have to tell you, over a period of time, there have been lots of incidents where people do jump over fences. And the best example was a couple of years ago where the guys actually drove down the lane with a ute. They're able to get onto their tray and then scale the fence. And that then prompted a lot of owners then to build a higher fence. So I figure this idea to turn this lane into a road is really ridiculous. And I think it also, for the people who live at the back on those blocks, they've... it's a bit of space between them and the neighbour over the other side, and I figure it's a valuable piece of green space and it should remain that way and it shouldn't be bitumised. So I feel strongly opposed to it. And I really think that the council should have actually done a consultation with all the residents in Scanlon Street as well as Broadway before they even thought about this idea.
Thanks. So just in response to your comment, I hear that you're not supportive of what's in the draft strategy. No matter what council's decision is tonight, at this stage, it is for the purpose of going to consultation. So your point about seeking feedback from the community would be the intention of whatever form of the draft was adopted by council, so it's in no way a finalised strategy at this point in time. Are there any other... Yes, please.
Hey, good evening.
My
name is Karel. I'm living at...
sorry, I just missed your name.
My name is Karel, K-A-R-E-L. I live in Ireland Street at 9. I got a corner house. I got the same issue. And look, I think you... probably should get first consultation with residents and think about what is the best idea. I think putting road there, like shifting one problem, can create another more and more serious problem. So I think about it and selling, if it's the option to sell those land to the owner houses who lives nearby, I think that's probably the best option. Putting the road there, I'm sorry, I think I have to agree with you, this is a little bit ridiculous idea, and I strongly disagree, but anyway, I'm open any discussion, and I will be definitely part of the community discussion briefing group. Thank you very much.
Great, thank you for your time. Any further statements? Okay, great. Then we'll move on to question time. So again, we have up to 15 minutes set aside for questions. Is there anything that people would like to ask a question on that's on the agenda? Okay, so we will move on. There's no petitions this evening, so item 9 is confirmation of the minutes. So item 9.1A relates to the ordinary council meeting held on the 27th of July. So do I have a mover that those minutes be received? Councillor Quinton has moved, seconded by Councillor Wilson. Is there anybody against? So that is carried. And 9.1B, that those minutes be confirmed as a true record. Moved by Councillor Wilson, seconded by Councillor Barty. Is there anyone against? So that is carried unanimously. There's no business deferred, so we'll go on to item 11, which is the external committee reports. So the officer recommendation is that there's no reports from this month, so a mover for that, Councillor Quinton. I'm happy to second that. Nobody against. That is carried. So item 12, this is the reports for tonight's agenda. 12.1 is for items to be carried en bloc. At the moment, I have the following reports coming out of en bloc. So 12.2, 12.6, 12.7, 12.10, 12.11, 12.12, 12.13, 12.14, 12.15, 12.16, 12.17, 16.1, 16.2 and 16.3. Are there any further? Councillor Wilson?
12.3.
3, yep.
And 12.5.
Okay, anything further? Okay, so can I have a mover for the remainder to be carried en bloc? Councillor Hamilton moved, seconded by Councillor Barty. Is there anyone against? Okay, so that is carried unanimously. So 12.2 is the Jubilee Reserve Master Plan. First of all, any questions for staff? Councillor Wilson.
Yes, so when the consultant was putting together the report, I noticed there's some indicative layouts for senior sport overlaid onto the field. I was wondering if an analysis was done on the Auskick grids, which are also used during winter on the field, and what the effect would be of the proposed layout on the number of available Auskick grids.
Through you, Madam Mayor. The consultants basically assessed all the users of the ground, and that included both the senior and junior football clubs. Obviously, the plans before council tonight don't actually show the Auskick grids, but in terms of whether they're able to be accommodated, given that the master plan shows relatively little change to the playing surface, with most of the change focused around the replacement of the pavilion, there would be no underlying concerns as to whether Auskick could be accommodated on an ongoing basis.
Thank you. Further questions? Yes, Councillor Wilson?
Yes, so I notice with the layout for the bar kiosk and the kitchen area, is that proposed to be a single-use bar kiosk for all user groups of the facility?
Through Madam Mayor, yes. So it would be an all-purpose facility that could be used by any particular user at any particular time. The storage room, which runs off the kitchen, would envisage lockable cabinets that would allow each individual club to lock their dry goods. But the kitchen could be used by whoever was using the facility at that time.
Thank you.
So I noticed too that the current building that's used by cricket in the northwest corner of the oval doesn't have any plans attached to it. Was there any consideration given to upgrading the facilities that are currently used by the cricket clubs?
Through you, Madam Mayor, based on the feedback provided by the local community and the user groups, no, there was no consideration for that.
Any further questions, councillors? Councillor Hamilton.
Through the chair, I sent an email last week where I queried whether council approving this item tonight would lock in a future council to using the Treadwell Architectural Services for future detailed designs, or whether that body of work would go out to an open market for quotations.
Are we able to get clarification on that issue?
Through you, Madam Mayor, Treadwell are not the architects, Donovan Payne are the architects, but in any event, understandably no decision has been made on that. This is simply a master plan process. Obviously, we've discussed with councillors previously the fact that if funding is secured, it would need a more detailed design to allow it to be implemented. Assuming it went to an open procurement process, you'd imagine that the architect would have some advantage given the accrued IP, but there's no reason it couldn't go to any other provider if deemed appropriate, but that would be a decision for the future.
Thank you.
So just to clarify, accepting this proposal tonight does not lock us in to using...
Through Madam Mayor, no, that's correct. Under the RFQ for the actual project, the copyright remains with the town, so we're not obliged to use the architect for any subsequent stage.
Okay, any further questions? Councillor Quinton?
I'd like to move it with a slight amendment to point four, mm-hmm. if I may. Just to include the words after the second word, funding, including but not limited to. So it would read, request that the CEO advocate for external funding to enable the implementation of the Jubilee Reserve Master Plan funding from, including but not limited to, the federal and state government.
And I imagine that is to achieve what you asked a question about at the briefing, about the opportunity for sponsorship and other sources of funding.
Yes.
Okay, so have you got that?
Yes.
All right, so Councillor Quinton has moved the officer recommendation with that slight amendment. Is there a seconder? Councillor Barty? Is there anybody against? Would you like to speak to the motion, Councillor Quinton?
Yes, thank you. We have had a lot of community involvement and engagement into this master plan. It's been, I think, a very thorough process. I think for a long time the user groups of the Jubilee Reserve have been calling for a plan that we can use to advocate to external organisations, the federal government, the state government, in order for us to have a very solid plan going forward. We always talk on this council about wanting to have these wonderful plans and to construct all of these wonderful ideas, but we often fall short because we don't have something that we can use to advocate to state and federal organisations and to external stakeholders for sponsorship opportunities. So this piece of work will allow us to do that with the backing of the community. We know that the community is behind this plan. This will now go out for us to be able to do that, I think, with a very solid backing from our community. Very similar to the Bass and Dream process that we went through, and I think something that all councils should adopt as a process. Go and ask the community what they want, come up with a concept plan, go and seek funding, because then we know that we are going to have complete support from our community, and I feel that we have done a very good job with this master plan. It needs to be adopted. We need to be going, particularly with on the eve of a federal election. We might be able to achieve some funding for this. Doesn't necessarily have to be through a grants process, but we do know that elections are times when political parties want to throw a lot of money around. So let's take up that opportunity, adopt it tonight, and allow the administration to do that work, as well as seeking funding from external stakeholders.
Thank you, Councillor Quinton. Councillor Barty, do you wish to speak to the item?
Only to say, Your Worship, that this has been a thoroughly comprehensive process to develop the Jubilee Master master plan with over 500 respondents to the community engagement efforts surrounding this particular master plan. It is, as Councillor Quinton mentioned, a concept which has been developed in concert with community, and it is now incumbent upon council to, I believe, endorse this master plan, and then take it out to prospective investors who seek to, alongside us, facilitate better facilities in our community.
Thank you, Councillor Barty. Councillor Lewson.
Thank you, Your Worship. I don't disagree with anything that's been said by Councillors Quinton or Barty. And it is a feature of our standing orders that the only way that there can be debate is if somebody opposes a motion. So I did so to further debate on this. The Community Sport and Recreations Facilities Fund grant process, which is the traditional state government funding process for these types of facilities, has historically focused on funding projects that include rationalisation of facilities in there. And the reason they do so is because they don't want to step in and take over asset management responsibilities for the local government. And so whilst I completely accept that a very thorough and rigorous community consultation process has been undertaken, my concern for the master plan as it's currently developed is that it will fall outside of the guideline considerations for what the CSRFF grant process would likely fund, seeing as there's no consolidation of the cricket facility to the northeast of the ground, and it is essentially a like-for-like replacement but for the addition of a new facility for indoor sports. The question that I asked about the number of Auskick grids being impacted by the new location of the facility wasn't answered, other than to say Auskick would still be accommodated. That's true, but the new location of the building would necessitate the reduction in the number of Auskick grids that are available, and those grids, I know from experience, are currently at capacity. It would require the turning away of children, it would require less participation. So whilst I support the process, whilst I support the attempts to seek state funding, I am cautious about the prospects of that being possible, given that it is essentially an asset replacement program rather than a consolidation of all of the facilities into a single facility.
Any other speakers? Wish to speak any further, Councillor Quinton?
I'm going to speak against this because, and even though I do support the sentiments of having a plan to show to other levels of government to secure funding, my concerns relate to the plans, and I have sent emails, and I do understand that detailed plans will be done into the future. However, I do have concerns that the plans perhaps are not particularly accommodating various aspects of the Stan Moses area, which was due to be replaced. My preference would be for those aspects of toilet location, what have you, to be fixed before we start presenting plans to the other levels of government. I don't know if that can be done, given that there was a limited contract for the consultant to create this, so I have no idea whether that can be done, but my preference would be for that to be done before we start presenting these plans to other levels of government, simply because I think that other levels of government that have expertise in sporting facilities may well identify some of the shortcomings in the plans. And it would be better if we are on the front foot right off the straight off the bat.
Thank you, Councillor Hamilton. Any other speakers? Councillor Quinton, did you wish to speak again?
Only to speak to the point of point four is that the intent of that is to expand it outside state and federal funding sources. So I think that satisfies the concern about the CSRFF funding. To speak to the point about the concept plan and governments, I think the driving intent and objective of this concept plan is to try and get funding in a federal election commitment, at which point they don't really care about detail. They don't really care where toilets are. That will come later. What we need to do now is get the funding first. Political parties, when they assess their election commitments, will assess it on how many votes they're going to win, not where the toilets are. So I think going down that rabbit hole of not having enough detail and throwing the baby out with the bathwater is a mistake. So I think that we should completely endorse this as it is, because there will be plenty of opportunity for consultation and detailed design later on down the track.
Thank you, Councillor Quinton. So I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour, and that is unanimous. Thank you, everyone. Item 12.3, it's the Heritage Conservation Notice for the property at 1 River Street in Bassendean. Councillor Wilson, you wanted this out of en bloc. Did you have questions? No? Any questions from other councillors? Okay, so we have an officer recommendation, so I either need a mover for that or an alternative. Councillor Hamilton?
Move it.
The officer recommendation?
Yes.
Can I just query, in the last dot point in the officer recommendation, is there a... is that a... So is the wording correct? Investigation and treatment of time for termite control?
Yes. That's correct.
Through Madam Mayor, yes, that is indeed a typo.
What should it say?
It should be investigation and treatment for termite control.
Okay, thank you.
Apologies for that.
All right, so Councillor Hamilton has moved the officer recommendation. Is there a seconder? Councillor Quinton seconded. Is there anybody against? Would you like to speak, Councillor Hamilton?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. This has been a very long, drawn-out process for this particular property, which has extraordinary value, heritage value. And I recall when I first came onto council in 2017, listening to a deputation about this, and I do know from that first report that it had been before council twice before that in the previous years. So I suspect that this has been going on for about 8 years, I think, in my estimate, but I'm not 100% sure on that. The issue is that there is ongoing deterioration, and communication on these issues has been spasmodic, and there's been some haphazard follow through. So clearly the first conservation order that was issued last year, did result in some restoration works being done. Unfortunately, the remainder of the works are still outstanding, and I do believe that it requires this formalised process to kickstart those secondary works that have not yet been done. So I would ask councillors to support this, if only so that we can actually put an end to seeing this item on our agendas every 6 months.
Thank you, Councillor Hamilton. Councillor Quinton?
No, I'm fine, thank you.
Councillor Wilson?
Thank you, Your Worship. It is a matter of public record that I have opposed this course that Council has taken at every single step of the way, and standing orders and codes of conduct prevent me from reflecting on any of the decisions that Council has made previously. What I would implore councillors to consider at the moment is the correspondence that we received from the owners of the property to protect their privacy. I won't go into the details of that other than to say that the stated intention of the owners of this property, that they made clear in the letter to all of us what they want to do, would be frustrated by this motion. If this motion were to pass, it would add additional encumbrances on the property and make it difficult for them to do what it is that they want to do. It would be...
Question. Sorry, I'm not clear on the letter that Councillor Wilson's talking about. Did we receive a letter?
We received an email that I forwarded to all councillors, I think after the briefing session last week. I assume that's the correspondence you're referring to.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, sorry, keep on continuing, councillors.
And in that email, they set out a course of action that they intended to undertake. It is very clear from the correspondence that they are distressed by the circumstances surrounding this. It is very clear from the correspondence that their health and well-being has suffered as a result of decisions that this council has made, of which I make no reflection. I would implore councillors to consider the human beings inside these bricks who have feelings rather than the bricks themselves, which, you know, I understand people can have a nostalgic attachment to, and, you know, concepts of heritage are open for everyone to form their own view of, but these are real people and they're having a hard go of it. And if we were to put orders on there, it would make it harder for them to do what it is they set out in their email to do, and that would be counterproductive.
Thank you, Councillor Wilson. Is there anybody else who would like to speak on this item? Councillor Hamilton, would you like to speak again?
Okay. I would like to highlight that in the report clearly the administration could compel a much shorter timeline for the works to be done, but in fact have been generous and extended that timeline out to the end of financial year next year, that these works were under a deputation last year. We were advised, assured in fact, that these works would be done, that the history of the works for this property has been very mixed, and I do believe that without this conservation order that the works may not be accomplished in a timely fashion. And for that reason alone, I think that we need to go down this path. I have all the sympathy in the world for the property owners. However, from a time perspective, I do think that we have now gone on for a very long time, years and years in fact, and I absolutely believe that we need to draw a line under it and to get this property restored. The property owners indicated that certain works had in fact been done. We quizzed the staff about what had and hadn't been done. I understand from the list of items there that this secondary lot of works is not particularly onerous. It's mainly internal works, and if the correspondence that was referred to is anything to go by, there were in fact assurances in that correspondence that some of those works had in fact already been done. So if that is the case, then it's simply a matter of confirming with staff through an application that these have been done, and that means that the Heritage Conservation Order is actually far less onerous. So I would urge councillors to support this recommendation.
Thank you, Councillor Hamilton. Okay, so we'll put that to the vote. All councillors in favour of the Office of Recommendation? Councillor Quinton, Hamilton, McWilliam and McLennan, and against is Councillor Wilson and Councillor Barty, so that is carried. So moving on to item 12.5, which is the proposed heritage areas and draft local planning policy for heritage and character.
I just have a question about process, please.
Yes.
Just in consultation with some of the people that are living in these areas, I think the conversation went along the lines of, well, I just want to do something to my second story and I just want to do this and I just want to do that. So I'm just wondering what would be the process of consultation if people just have slight detailed questions. Who are they going to call? How's the process going to run? Because I feel like there are a lot of people that are going to read this, and they might read the suggested control area requirements and go, okay, it doesn't matter. But then there might be some people that will go, well, I just want to put a garage up, or I just need to know what slight thing I can or can't do in order for us to do this. So can you just explain how that's going to work?
Yeah, certainly, through you, Madam Mayor. Obviously, if council resolves to allow this policy to be advertised. We would assemble a consultation package, and that would typically be a policy itself, the council report, FAQs that we think people might be interested in, any other information that might be relevant, which could include the heritage and character study that sort of prefaced all of this. Bass and Dream obviously has a role to play as well. But broadly, in terms of those detailed questions, if they can't interpret it themselves, that's okay. They just need to contact one of the planning staff, and they will, if they're able to communicate what their particular query is, staff will be able to answer.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Hamilton.
Through the chair, having read the policy, can I just have confirmation from the staff that the primary advantage of these heritage, creation of these heritage areas, is that properties cannot be demolished without actually having interaction with the staff. Is that right or not? I'm mainly concerned about the level three heritage properties. I know level one and two are protected, but level three, I'm a bit curious about those.
Through Madam Mayor, landowners would always have to have an interaction with the town to demolish, because if nothing else, they would need a demolition permit under the Building Act. But that's a building matter as opposed to a land use planning matter. In terms of the planning side of that question, the current provision as drafted is 7.8A on page 5 of 13. And that is basically saying that demolition does not require development approval unless it relates to a property on the heritage list.
Yes, that's
and
what I'm getting at.
And the properties on the heritage list are properties that are typically categories 1 and 2, as distinct from categories 3 and 4.
Mm.
It would be open to council before or after advertising to take a different view and make it more or less lenient. If council wanted to accept applications for development approval for categories 3 and 4, that provision could be amended to suit.
And that can be done after the advertising and the community
consultation? Certainly. Through Madam Mayor, obviously advertising the draft policy does not fetter council's future decision on the adoption of the policy. Council would be armed with the public feedback in response to the advertising, and it would be open to council at that stage to make any changes before adopting the policy or to not adopt the policy at all.
Thank you for that. I'm sorry my question was so badly worded. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Councillor Wilson.
Thank you, Your Worship. So if I take councillors and staff to page 6 of 13 of the draft policy at point 8.1D for dog. For context, it's the precinct-specific development standards, Kenny Street Heritage Area. It says, where new dwellings are proposed, the dwelling shall be designed to integrate with either Federation, interwar or post-war dwelling styles by way of design elements and materials. So if I was a homeowner looking to build, what would that mean in practical terms? Who would I need to go to satisfy that those requirements were met, and what's the process for determining whether those requirements have been met?
Through Madam Mayor, ultimately it would need to be to the satisfaction of the town or council, as the case may be, in terms of determining the application for development approval. What it means practically is not a replica or a copy of those styles, but simply an incorporation of some of the design elements and or some of the materials, whether it's weatherboard, brick, anything else. Obviously, an applicant could seek independent design advice from an architect or an urban designer or a heritage consultant, if they so chose. Or ultimately, they could consult the town, being the authority that will be assessing the application and, in most cases, determining it. If the town required extra, comfort that what was proposed was appropriate. The town could always go and seek its own independent advice from those consultants, architects, etc. But in most cases, I'd suggest that wouldn't be necessary, and it would be a case of the applicant demonstrating to the town that their proposal has picked up on some of those elements and the materials used in the nearby dwellings.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you, Worship. Just a follow-up question. So, say an owner-builder has gone through that process and reasonably comes to a disagreement with staff about what constitutes interwar or post-war dwelling styles. Is this the sort of matter that would go to SAT, and how confident are staff that such a provision would be upheld in a SAT appeal if there's a reasonable difference of opinion about what those styles represent?
Through Madam Mayor, if it involved a discretionary decision of the town, it can certainly be appealed to the SAT. Whether it's about architectural styles or heritage and character protection or any other discretionary element. Given that the draft policy is based on broad community feedback through Bass and Dream, is supported largely by the 2018 Character and Heritage Study, and does in fact serve a proper planning purpose insofar as ensuring that the built form of any new development is appropriate in the context, there would certainly be confidence at the town's end that a competent argument could be put forward. That is not to say that SAT would absolutely see it that way, because that's SAT's jurisdiction to review the decision, but certainly staff would be satisfied that it's a reasonable position to take, it's an appropriate policy position to adopt in the circumstances, and does serve a genuine planning purpose.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you, Worship. Just one last follow-up question. So the considerable body of work that was done to analyse the different precincts within the town, I noticed you said it's largely the same, but I'm guessing there might be some variation to it. What I'm wondering is it possible for the town, as a follow-up to the words that are in these policies, to produce a document with some visual aids to indicate what some of those design characteristics might look like as a way of guiding architects and builders as to compliance with the policy?
Through Madam Mayor, certainly, and that's for those that have sort of gone through that 2018 document recently, there are quite a few visual aids there, but that could certainly be extracted into a more easily digestible info sheet for landowners.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, so there's no further questions, Councillor. Do we have somebody who would like to move? Yes, Councillor Wilson?
Oh, sorry, I was just preempting your question to ask if someone would like to move it.
The officer recommendation?
The officer recommendation with a single amendment.
What is the amendment?
The intent of the amendment is that the document that Mr. Gibson just described,
the Heritage and Character Study.
Yes, that some sort of visual reference guide be produced by the town to support the policy and to help builders comply with the spirit and intent of what the words mean. So an additional resource that accompanies the policy. have you made those words make sense and be articulate?
Maybe we'll just give our minute taker a moment, and then when you're ready, if you could maybe read them back to us.
Is this a point three?
It is a point three, yes.
Okay, I have that a visual reference guide be produced by town staff to assist
community
and developers.
Understand and comply with.
Design
elements of the policy.
Yeah. Just hold on a moment.
Okay,
did you have something?
Read out again.
Yes.
That that a visual reference guide be produced by town staff to assist the community to understand and comply with design elements of the policy.
So just to make it sort of comply with being a motion, can we put the word requests at the beginning of that?
That council requests that town staff produce a visual reference guide to assist the community.
I'll second that.
Okay, so Councillor Wilson has moved, Councillor Hamilton has seconded. Is there anybody against? That is carried unanimously. So moving on to 12.6, which is the draft rights of way strategy. If I could just ask the staff... Councillor Hamilton, thank you. If I forget to retrieve Councillor Hamilton, we'll move on to the next item. Can somebody please remind me? So 12.6, as councillors would be aware, I circulated a proposed alternative earlier, but I'd also like to ask the staff, given the comments that have been made by a number of the community members who live in proximity to, I believe it's right of way number 5. So the current proposal in the draft strategy is for that particular right of way to be upgraded. Was consideration given to closure, as has been suggested by was present this evening, and what are staff's thoughts on that proposal?
Through Madam Mayor, obviously every right-of-way was assessed on its merits as to whether it would be appropriate, more appropriate for closure or retention. This is not an exact science. Obviously it depends on a number of factors, and that includes subterranean infrastructure, the prevailing width of the right-of-way itself, what it links to or doesn't link to, what is already there, whether it's been upgraded or whether it's largely remnant vegetation or low ground cover, whether it's currently fenced off or not. So it is not a exact science, like I say. On balance, this was considered appropriate for the purposes of advertising for retention and upgrading, but as it would be similarly appropriate for council to adopt a contrary view, either now or later. I would sort of acknowledge the opinions of those present, but suggest to council that's only a small number of the broader precinct, and it would be open. Sorry, that's a friend here. It would be open to council to, similarly with the comment I made about the policy previously, either make a change now before advertising, or advertise it as recommended, reserving its right to change it later. If indeed the public sentiment is as conveyed by the individuals here tonight. So it's certainly open to council to form the view that right-of-way 5 should be closed and advertise it as such, or simply advertise it, and if in fact the objections are sustained by these and other landowners, it may well be appropriate for staff to recommend and or council to resolve to actually change it at that stage. Advertising it now does not commit council to anything in the future.
Thank you. And just one other question following on from that. I asked you before the meeting about what would happen in the instances where there was recommendation for closure and the requirement for the adjacent landowners to agree to acquiring that land. I imagine that that would be a more challenging proposal that to get agreement of that nature. Would it make sense to put the more potentially challenging proposal, which would be the closure in this case, to the community and get feedback on that? And if we're not getting, if that's not acceptable to the majority of people, then it will give us a clear indication that maybe closure as was originally, sorry, upgrade as was originally suggested might be something to pursue.
Through Madam Mayor, that's certainly an option. I suppose, going back to the original comment, the department, in my experience, is reluctant to support a closure where the whole of the right-of-way is not dealt with in some way, shape or form. They don't want leftover or remnant or residual parts. If it is to be closed, the whole thing needs to be closed and effectively reallocated to abutting landowners. If there is a precinct, and it might be the one abutting right-of-way 5, where landowners are reasonably coordinated in their efforts and can actually come up with a consolidated proposal from town to consider, it would not be as difficult as if there was a right of way where there was a variety of different opinions. In those situations, you'd imagine, yes, retention upgrading would be the only practical outcome, because getting all the landowners to form a view about the acquisition might be difficult. But like I say, I suppose it's really a question of what council wants to seek input on, either which way, whether they're advertising right of way 5 for a proposed closure or a proposed retention. The feedback will be largely the same, in terms of those that don't support one will support the other and vice versa. So it is probably just a question of what council is comfortable putting out to the community at this stage.
Other questions, councillors? So yes, you should have received it in the email. So if nobody else has a question, maybe I can read that out. So the officer's recommendation is to adopt the draft rights of way policy strategy, for the purpose of advertising. So my proposal was an amendment to that recommendation, so that council adopts the draft's right of way strategy for the purposes of advertising, subject to it being modified to the satisfaction of the Chief Executive Officer, to remove any references to the need for ceding land or the widening of any existing rights of way.
I too have an alternative recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
And my alternative recommendation would be that council releases, rather than adopts, releases the draft rights of way strategy 2021 for the purposes of advertising for community feedback, including specifically writing individually to every landowner adjacent to each right of way.
Okay.
Right-of-way strategy for the purposes of advertising or community feedback, including specifically writing to
Every landowner adjacent to each right-of-way.
So that's essentially the officer recommendation, really. Yeah. Okay, so that's a foreshadowed motion if mine does not get support.
Yes.
Yep. Okay, so I will move the officer recommendation with the amendment that I just proposed. So if there's a seconder for that, we can discuss that motion. Councillor Quinton has seconded. Are you against, Councillor Wilson?
I am against.
Okay, so hold on, just let me get my timer going. So first of all, thank you to the staff for progressing this. This has been a topic that has come up intermittently over the last few years while I've been on council, so it's great to have some progress, to have something to work towards over the coming years. As the staff have indicated, this is just the first step in the process, so we've got a draft strategy at the moment. There's a lot more work to do on this further down the track. The first step in the process is to put it out to the community and get feedback from those people who particularly live adjacent to each of these rights of way. I have heard the members of the community tonight who have a specific interest in right of way number 5, and I take on board the staff's advice that this is merely an opportunity for feedback. So if there is a significant interest from that particular part of the community for right of way 5 to be converted to be closed, then that is definitely something that council can consider when it comes back to us following consultation. I think the major concern for me with the draft is around some of the rights of ways that are proposed to be widened, and the requirement in some cases for a portion of land adjacent to them to be ceded to allow that widening to occur. I don't think that this is something that would be acceptable to our community, hence the reason why I've proposed this amendment. In terms of Councillor Wilson's proposed foreshadowed motion, I think it largely reflects what the officers have already proposed, which is advertising it, and I note in the report that it's already been indicated that all of the property owners affected would be contacted directly, so I don't feel like that foreshadowed motion is adding anything to what has already been before council. So I'd encourage councillors to support this motion, particularly given the concerns that were raised last week at the briefing session around those rights of way that would require widening and the ceding of land under the draft policy. Councillor Quinter, did you second this motion?
I did, and yes, I waived my right to speak.
Thank you. Councillor Wilson?
Thank you, Your Worship. With the greatest of respect, I disagree with the position you've put forward in two respects. The first one is that as an elected representative of this community, I'm not interested in delegating my decision-making powers in relation to this matter to the CEO for her satisfaction or otherwise. We are elected to represent our community, and it's our place to make ourselves satisfied on what it is that we consult with the community about. The second thing that I respectfully disagree with is the removing of the words around compulsory acquisition. I think it would be preemptive for us at this stage to remove that from the public discussion, because it may well be a factor that ought properly be considered by the community, and if it's not in this consultation period now, it may necessitate a further consultation period later on. I also think doing so undermines, is probably too harsh a word, but compromises maybe is better, the integrity of the work that the staff have done in looking at all of these rights of way on a case-by-case basis from a planning perspective, and thinking about what the planning considerations are for each right of way, separate to what may or may not be acceptable to the community. I think that is something that we would find out by putting the staff's work to the community for the community to comment on. And I know from my own experience door knocking all through those areas in the lead up to the last election that public opinion is pretty much split 50-50. You knock on one door and the person says, the right-of-way is going to be a superhighway for thieves to come and steal my stuff. And then you knock on the next door and someone says, I would like to subdivide and put a granny flat out there, and I would like to have access to the laneway so that you know, I don't have to cut a big strip down the side of my property. Both groups are very sincere in their belief, and it's 50-50. So, you know, there is no position that's going to make everyone happy on this. Everyone, 50% of the community is going to be unhappy regardless. So let's look at it from a planning point of view, and let's make sure that all of the staff's work is put before the community so they can make a properly informed contribution.
Thank you. Any other speakers? Sorry, you're not able to speak. I know you want to. Okay, in that case, just respond to Councillor Wilson's comments. First of all, the comment was made about delegating our decision-making to the CEO. This proposal in no way is delegating our responsibility. It is identified an aspect of the draft strategy that Council may wish to modify, and has been very specific about what would need to be, what Council is requesting to have removed from the draft strategy. So I don't think that there is any concern there about Council's decision-making being delegated to the CEO. Secondly, the point about compulsory acquisition. I think there's been some experiences of councils past where there's been compulsory acquisition. I know there's still a lot of, or a number of people, particularly in the Eden Hill area, who continue to have grievances against previous councils where there has been compulsory acquisition of land for various proposals. I'm fully supportive of hearing what the community has to say on this proposal. My concern more relates to the degree of concern that that may generate in the community. I think for all of these rights of way, it's going to be incumbent upon the local communities on each of those, surrounding each of those rights of way, to work together to come to some agreement. If that agreement is around ceding the land so that a laneway can be widened, by all means that's something that council can consider, but I think putting it out with something that is potentially very inflammatory is not necessarily going to achieve a positive response from our community. So I encourage councillors to support this. We really, as I said, are right at the beginning of this process, and council is very open to hearing the different alternatives for each of these parcels of land in the feedback, and I'd encourage everybody to get involved who has an interest in these laneways. Okay, councillors, so we'll put this to the vote. So we're voting on the office recommendation with the amendment from myself around removing the widening and the reference to ceding of land. So all those in favour, Councillor Quinton, Barty, McWilliam and McLennan, and against is Councillor Wilson. So that is carried. Would someone mind retrieving Councillor Hamilton? Thank you. All right, so moving on to 12.7, it's the proposed CATS local law. First of all, are there questions for the staff? Thank you. Any questions on the CATS local law? Is that a question, Councillor Hamilton, or waiting?
Yeah, I'm just trying to find my place. Through the chair, I'm sure that you asked this question last week, but I just need some clarity because in the report, clauses 2.22b and 2.32b, there's a mention that the department would probably not accept those clauses. Now, I've got two copies of the draft proposed CAT law in my attachment, one that has the occupier piece put in. That's the only difference I can see between the two drafts. And I'm just wondering what is happening with those clauses where, on one hand, we've got a report saying that, you know, they should be suggested to be deleted, but they're still in the
draft. So the suggestion for deletion wasn't from our staff, would you?
Through Madam Mayor, that's correct. So on page 38 of the agenda, under seizure of CATS, it acknowledges that the department raised the issue with the seizure clauses, which were 2.22b and 2.32b. The staff were of the view that given the CAT Act already provides for the seizure of CATS, it wasn't necessary to remove the provision from the local law. Obviously, that would be a matter that's effectively tested with the standing committee, but the town's view on that is that the CAT Act already provides the power.
Okay.
Councillor Wilson?
Thank you, Your Worship. There is a large black cat with white feet who regularly comes onto my property and eats the food of my cats. Under this local law, what rights do I have as a property owner to guard and protect the sanctity of my cat's food against this feline interloper?
Through Madam Mayor, if this local law was enacted as drafted, it would be an offence for the owner of said black cat to allow it onto your property if you did not consent for it to occur. If the ranger service were able to substantiate the identity of the cat and by extension the identity of the owners, there would be penalties.
Your Worship, a follow-up question. To assist the rangers to identify said black cat with white feet, am I able to entrap that cat in any way until such time as rangers are able to ascertain its owner's identity?
Through you, Madam Mayor, only an authorised person may seize the cat under the CAT Act. Any member of the public may request a trap from Ranger Services who will come and assist in setting it up on the private property, but the cat can only be seized by an authorised officer.
So just to clarify, that's already possible. Any other questions? Councillor Hamilton.
Curiosity question following on from that comment. If residents can get a trap from the town, are they compelled, if they trap a cat, to call an officer, an authorised officer? Because I would hate to see them using our traps and then disposing of the animal in any way, shape or form that they like. That would be hideous.
That's
Through Madam Mayor, yes, they would be compelled to allow the town's authorised officers to deal with any captured cat. That is not to say that that would happen in every instance, of course, but that would certainly be the information conveyed to anyone borrowing the town's traps.
And again, can I clarify, when you say they would be, they are currently compelled?
Yes.
Councillor Quinton?
Just a process question. Should the Joint Standing Committee disallow this clause, what's the process after that?
Do you want me to? Through Madam Mayor, the process is that if they disallow the clause, they will advise the Mayor of their decision, and it will be that the clause will be inoperable and we will have to make an undertaking. It will come back to Council that we will comply with what the Joint Standing Committee has requested us to do and make the undertaking that we won't actually enforce those particular clauses. And we will review them and amend it later on.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And again, for clarification, my understanding is that even though there's been a recommendation against including these clauses, there are other local governments, such as the City of Swan, which have almost identical clauses in their local law.
Yeah. Through you, Madam Mayor, yes, that's correct. And as Ms. Kenya suggested last week, we wouldn't just be providing the local law in isolation, we'd be providing basically a justifying text to support our position, but and also referring to the fact that other local governments, in fact our neighbouring local government, has what is ostensibly the same clause.
Any further questions, councillors? Okay, do we have moving the officer recommendation, Councillor Wilson? Is there a seconder? Councillor Barty second. Anybody against? So that is carried unanimously. So now we're moving on to item 1210, which is the supply, preparation, installation of turf and turf renovation services. Any questions on that one? So we have a mover for the officer recommendation in that case. Councillor Barty moved. Is there a seconder? Councillor Wilson seconded. Anybody against? So that's carried unanimously. 1211, the construction of Sandy Beach Reserve play space. Any questions? Councillor Hamilton, are you... sorry, Councillor Quinton, are you questioning or moving?
I'm moving this motion.
I thought you might want to move this motion. is there a seconder? Councillor Hamilton? Is there anybody against? Councillor Quinton, did you wish to speak to the motion as the mover? So that is... You're against? Okay.
Sorry.
So, hold on a moment. So, Councillor Quinton has moved, Councillor Hamilton has seconded, and Councillor Wilson is against. Would you like to speak, Councillor Quinton?
Can I just say hallelujah and then sit down? I think that would be an appropriate speech for this much desperately needed infrastructure project in our town. One of the reasons that I ran for council was for this project. When my son was 5 months old, the idea of building a playground at Sandy Beach was an idea that had already been around for at least 10 years. Those children who are now teenagers never got to enjoy having this beautiful playground down at Sandy Beach. My kid is now six, and he's got now a very short, limited window of time for him to enjoy this playground. We build playgrounds in local governments because they get children out of their houses. Now more than ever, we have children sitting around on screens. Now more than ever, we have children who are not getting the levels of exercise. There is a lot of research to back up the need for children to be outside exercising and interacting with each other in a sociable way. The design that we put and the level of detail that we put into this playground was to ensure that it was nature-based, a nature-based playground. We didn't want something that was plastic and fantastic. We wanted something that the children could really get their feet into, they could take their shoes off, they could build nests, they could build cubby houses, they could improve their motor skills, they could climb things. And I think what we have created is absolutely beautiful, absolutely beautiful. We wanted something that would connect the children and their families down to the river. The amount of families that have come to me and said, I love Sandy Beach, but geez, I wish we had a good playground down there. Now, finally, we're at a point where we are going to build something that this community has been asking for at least 15 years, if not longer. I'm so proud to be moving this motion. We are now finally at a stage where we can start building and constructing so that the kids that are born this year and the kids that are born every year after this will be able to enjoy this wonderful playground. We want people to stay in Bassendean. We don't want people to go to Woodbridge to go and play with their children. We don't want people to be going to Bayswater. We don't want people to be going out of town in order for them to pack up a picnic, stand at the river, and enjoy some time with their family and friends. We want them to stay in Bassendean because they'll spend money here. They'll go to the pub afterwards. They'll buy a coffee on the way. That's what this is, not just about children. This is about an economic development of keeping people in town, creating jobs. The other point, last point I want to make about this is that this project... extension, please.
Moved.
Thank you.
Seconded.
Thank you. Is that this?
Assuming no one's against. Keep going.
This project will also allow the community to get involved. We know that the Bassendean Preservation Group want to develop seeds and so that they can plant them down at the project. We know that the men's shed want to be able to construct things as long as the staff. Deem it compliant. We know that the community want to be involved in this project. Yes, you, Donna. So this is something that is going to bring the community together, not only in the construction of it, but in the ongoing use of it for generations to come.
Thank you, Councillor Quinton. Councillor Hamilton, did you wish to speak?
Just very quickly, I am very pleased that this project is finally, going to be built, but I'm also pleased with all the other surrounding area that's going to be enhanced at the same time. Improved toilets, my goodness, we've needed those for a long time down there. Improved green space down there with the planting of woody meadows and things associated with that next year. So ultimately, in the end, there is a collaboration there that is going to turn this area into a very attractive space, and I am so pleased to have seen different officers come together from their different departments to make this a reality. I have to say that when I first came on council and first saw the plans on the other side, I was a bit concerned. This was before the current administration. We now have moved to a space and a set of plans that are going to be wonderful. And for that, I have to thank the current administration and the staff who've made that happen.
Thank you, Councillor
Hamilton.
Councillor Wilson.
Thank you, Your Worship. I too rise to speak in favour of this motion. I'd like to pay thanks particularly to Jeanette Madison and the other members of the People Services Committee whose community efforts back in the days when this council had committees that included community members on them really drove the impetus to putting this on council's agenda. And it's taken us a good 4 years to go from design concept one to design concept two, to issuing a tender to now approving a tender, which shows that good things take time, I suppose. Lots of people have been involved, and as other councillors have mentioned, the staff have really applied themselves to getting an outcome that I think will see our community proud going forward.
Thank you. Anybody else who'd like to speak? Councillor Quinton? Okay, so we'll put that to the vote. All those in favour? That is carried unanimously.
Yay!
Okay, item 12.12 is next. It's the draft property management policy and community leasing framework. So once again, any questions first? Yes, Councillor Hamilton?
I've got a series of questions here. Just to give an overview of where I'm going, it's about the social dividend that might be achieved from entering into new leases. And so some of my questions relate around that. So the first question I've got is, in respect to negotiating new agreements once a lease or licence has expired or is about to expire, may I inquire why the town would enter into an exclusive lease arrangement with an organisation that only utilises a town facility one day a week, leaving said valuable asset unused for the remainder of the week.
Through you, Madam Mayor. It's a, in relation to that question, there's probably a range of ways I could respond, but at the moment we have six community facilities that are leased by six organisations, clubs and not-for-profit organisations for a specific purpose. So the bowling club, for example, although the lease has expired, the facility there that includes the clubhouse and the bowling greens was, and hopefully will be again, leased by the bowling club for the purpose of playing bowls. Holding a lease over town property comes at considerable cost and liability to do a lot of things on the part of the lessee. They're responsible essentially for almost all of the costs associated with ownership of the property, including all repairs, maintenance, outgoings associated with maintaining the facility, operating the facility, staffing it, etc., and including, in the case of the bowling club, maintaining the bowling greens. So if, by way of granting a lease to a club over the entirety of the facility, that would generally come with a right for that club to hire out or sublease part of the facility and retain the funds from so doing to assist them to meet those requirements of a lease. Most of these facilities, or in fact all of the six, aren't really multi-purpose facilities. They're aged infrastructure that are generally, were generally constructed for a purpose.
So, can I follow on from that? So, in the attachment on page 7 for eligibility criteria and essential terms, which is that page there, we've got a second heading which is shared use. So, clearly, the administration have thought about the potential shared use of some of these facilities. And I would agree with the officer, Mr. White, that there are some facilities that are not built in a way that they can be shared. But there are maybe two others that could. So my question to the officer is, under that framework, the second heading, shared use, could there be an additional requirement, perhaps whereby those leaseholders using the facility for less than, say, 20 hours a week must provide, say, 10 hours of free use of the facility for not-for-profits or community groups? This is a question for you, whether there's the capacity for us to impose something like that in a new lease situation. I do understand that the current situation, many of those leaseholders are focus on a single use, but bouncing forward 5 or 10 years when it's a new lease being discussed, that's the opportunity to actually insert these. So is there that capacity for the administration to look at something like that?
Through you, Madam Mayor, absolutely I think there is, and that's the purpose behind that second eligibility criteria.
Yep.
Is to not be too specific, to try and sort of tie it down in a framework as to what the actual parameters may be, but to acknowledge that in the future there may be a suitable facility, or there may be a suitability for different groups to occupy different components of the facility in some sort of co-lease type fashion. So I think that's to preserve some flexibility in relation to the town's facilities. Of course, this policy or the framework can be amended from time to time too as things change.
Okay, so with your indulgence, I have one more in that series of questions. So fourth down in that list is membership and governance. And again, my question is, can there be a more specific requirement of a tenant to expand their membership by, say, 5 or 10% per annum until they reach like maximum capacity for that facility. And the reason I bring this up clearly is because we have some facilities only used for a matter of 5 or 6 hours a week, and it seems such a waste. So is that membership category there, could there be something in there about expanding that membership, putting an obligation on them to actually draw more members from the community and to promote themselves? Because, if that doesn't happen, we're not expanding our social dividend. Would you agree with that?
Through you, Madam Mayor, I certainly agree with the sentiment, Councillor, but I do wonder about the ability of Council to sort of control the way a club conducts its activities. I think once Council has granted a lease, under certainly consistent with the terms of this framework, it does grant extensive rights to the lessee for them to be able to conduct their activities, as long as they meet the terms of the lease agreement. So I'm not sure that we would be able to put those sorts of parameters on, but that could be a relevant factor perhaps when it came to Council for renewal of the lease agreement, perhaps, or a review. But I would hesitate to, certainly the framework, put sort of specific parameters around that, because it may in certain circumstances be quite impossible to attract further members of a club due to lack of interest or a range of other potential reasons.
Someone else, but I do have another question after.
Okay, does anybody else have a question? Okay, one final question, Councillor Hamilton.
So, again, following on from that, depending on the structure of the facility, there are some facilities that we know of in that list where you could potentially, in new lease negotiations, split it into two separate lettable areas. So I don't see anything in these examples there that would encourage that to happen where possible. So is there potential to incorporate something like that into this framework?
Through Madam Mayor, I guess the intent of the framework is ultimately to facilitate sort of the current arrangements really that we have with the six lessees of these six premises, but to do so in an open, transparent and equitable way, so that the terms of the lease agreements are consistent across the various clubs and associations in terms of lease premium, maintenance obligations, obligations to meet various costs and so on. I'm not sure whether this framework can sort of encourage that sort of expansion. I think, again, with the facilities that we have, they do tend to lend themselves to a single lessee. I think having multiple lessees is complicated because it creates questions as to ultimate responsibility, whereas a normal arrangement would generally be perhaps a lessee and a sublease type arrangement.
Okay, councillors, we've got an officer recommendation. Do we have someone who would like to move that or an alternative? Councillor Quinton moving the officer recommendation?
Yes.
Is there a seconder? Okay, I'm happy to second it. Is there anybody against? Okay, so that is carried unanimously. So we're now moving on to 1213, which is the councillor ICT policy. Any questions to start with? Councillor Barty?
Yes, thank you, Your Worship. I just noticed that section 2.4 of the ICT policy states that elected members will not be permitted to bring their own device, as this inhibits the ability of the town to implement appropriate cybersecurity controls. Elected members will be able to access information held on the councillor portal once operational via any device connected to the internet. I understand that the councillor portal is currently under construction, is due to start soon. Just wondering if through a private device or any device connected to the internet, could councillors access information which is currently held on the Office 365 suite, such as our counsellor Outlook emails, what else do we have on there, Teams app and various different things.
Through you, Madam Mayor, there's still a little bit to work through with this. I think the intent is to try and assist councillors to effectively discharge their duties and obligations as best as we possibly can and as efficiently as we possibly can with the limited resources that we have. So the intent is really to provide a facility for councillors to be able to access information conveniently. So whether that's through a councillor portal, which we all know is in the budget and will be developing and releasing this year, and through the town's email exchange. So they have security wraparounds already. So we're reasonably confident, but not 100% certain at this point, that allowing access through to those two platforms by multiple devices will be okay from a security perspective. What we would like to see happen is that where information comes out of those systems into a working environment, so documents are downloaded and worked with, we would like that to be on a town provided device that we can implement appropriate cyber security controls on, because there are no other security controls. It's difficult with bring your own devices if they're not perhaps owned by councillors and they're owned by a third party, a workplace or something like that, for the town to actually implement the necessary security on those devices. But the intent is to try and allow access via any device, but provide a working platform through a town provided device. Laptop.
So would it be fair to surmise that under this current policy, any device connected to the internet, provided you had access to the Office 365 suite, would have read-only access? If you intended to edit, download or edit the document, then you would be required to do so on a council device, and the purpose for that is to facilitate better cybersecurity protocols. Is that a fair summary of your response?
So just following on from what Mr. White said, there's been a lot of discussion on this topic. Like, we've had a workshop that took up a significant amount of time at the briefing, and given what Mr. White has said about there still being a few things to work through, I've had some conversations with Mr. White in the last couple of days, but I'd like to propose to councillors that we defer this item into the September meeting to give the staff the opportunity to explore some of the options around how councillors who wished to use the multiple devices and potentially other platforms could be looked at in some more detail, and I believe you were supportive of that and would allow the staff to provide councillors with a more fulsome understanding of the implications of that. Is that correct?
Yes, through you, Madam Mayor. Thank you. I think it would allow us to just provide a little bit more certainty over some of the specific questions that have come from councillors, certainly in the briefing session last week, and from councillors tonight as well. Whilst it's not an exact science, there are a lot of complexities to this, and we don't know at the moment. We're not experts in all platforms. We've got different strengths due to the operating environment that we have for the administration. So it's not an exact science. There are some uncertainties. But the intent is, as I've outlined earlier, and I think the additional time will allow us to hopefully clarify and come back to councillors with some responses to some of those specific issues that have been raised.
Okay, so councillors, I'll read out what I'm proposing to move. If there's further questions, you're welcome to ask them afterwards. So it's that council, one, defers consideration of a councillor information and communication technology policy until the September ordinary council meeting, and two, requests the CEO explore options for the councillor ICT policy to accommodate multiple/BYO devices. Councillor Hamilton.
I'll second that.
Okay. Is there anybody against? that is carried unanimously. Thanks, everybody. Are you okay with that? So 12.14 is the review of the delegations register. Any questions for the staff? Councillor Hamilton?
Just need to find it, if anyone's got a question before me. Sorry, I'm just a bit slow on this one. Okay. So this one was deferred from last month where I actually indicated I wanted some amendments. The first amendment was to delegation 1.211, which is on page 26 of the attachment. And I believe that the officers had no opposition to my suggested amendment there, which was the delegation as it is, but under conditions, it was simply adding a paragraph that is in a lot of the other conditions. Exercising this delegation must comply with Town of Bassendean purchasing policy, Town of Bassendean procurement guidelines, prior to going to market, notification to councillors through the CEO bulletin of the nature of the goods and the estimated costs sought. So I understand that the officers had no problem with that one. Okay. The second one appeared to be more problematic. That's the next page along, which is 1.212, which is on page 27. Now, this one under function, point 2, relates to the sole supplier provision. Would I be able to ask the CEO a question on this one? Last week, I did ask a question, and it was taken on notice that this sole supplier provision had been used two or three times, was what I was told last week. Now, I haven't actually received a response on that other than to see a slight amendment to the agenda where it says that it's been used on two occasions since July 2020. And I was wondering if the CEO could provide to me, we know the first occasion when it was used, but what was the second occasion when that sole supplier provision was used?
Off the top of my head, I can't recall, but I could advise. It may be an environmental project. I don't have that information at hand.
So would I be able to get that information forwarded?
Certainly.
Okay. Getting to the gist of what my amendment for that one is, that I wanted, currently under our policy, the sole supplier provision, which is for the unique nature of goods and services, under delegated authority, the CEO can actually appoint a sole supplier up to $250,000. And I wish to peg that back to $50,000, and that anything over and above $50,000 comes back to council for a council decision. I don't wish to stop sole supplier.
Okay, so Councillor Hamilton, are you asking questions still at the moment?
Well, I'm curious about what there seemed to be some tie in here. It was tied into the tenders and what have you, but I don't believe that that's tied into tenders because it's an isolated entity, sole supplier.
It would just require an update of the purchasing policy.
Okay.
So
okay, so those two things are the things I'd like to change in the delegations. So the first one that I've mentioned, which the staff indicate they have no problem with, and the second one is this item 1.212, where the sole supplier, point 2, is pegged down to $50,000 for CEO's delegation.
Okay, so am I to take it that you are moving the officer recommendation with amendments?
Unless somebody else has other questions.
I'm seconding.
Okay, can we just maybe get clarification about the wording of the amendment that you're proposing?
Yep. I did read out the first one, but I don't know if you've got
that. I've got them in front of me.
Right. Okay, you've got them in front of you.
I do, yes.
Okay,
yes.
So it's the same as last time.
So I have point two, now has on the end, with amendments to the following items, and then those two items listed underneath.
Yep. Thank you.
1.2.11 and 1.2.12.
Thank you.
Okay, so we've had the officer recommendation with point two amended to address those two delegations, moved by Councillor Hamilton, seconded by Councillor Wilson. Is there anybody against? I'm against. Would you like to speak, Councillor Hamilton?
Thank you. Councils generally have very strict requirements in respect to their purchasing. And most purchasing is fairly standard. It's, you know, under 50,000 requests for quotes, over 50,000, up to 250,000. There's all these different levels. After 250,000, it goes out to tender. The thing with all of those processes is it's a competitive process. And all of those delegations for those processes are fine. The sole supplier provision is unique. It's different from all those other types of purchasing. It is basically for the supplier of unique goods and services, or the unique nature goods and services. And this means that there is a certain latitude involved in selecting and appointing a sole supplier. Again, I have no problems with anything under 50,000. Operationally, there are lots of small jobs where clearly a sole supplier provision is not a problem. But when we start getting into the bigger amounts of money, and for a small council like this, 250,000 or even 150 up to 250,000 is a significant expenditure. And I think that this is something that requires council oversight. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Wilson.
Thank you, Your Worship. The extension of a lot of these delegations were emergency measures that were brought in at the beginning of the COVID pandemic, when we were uncertain as to what the effects of that were going to be. They were always meant to be temporary measures. It is proper that this council has oversight on the expenditure of our neighbours' money. We tax our neighbours and we spend our neighbours' money on their behalf. It is proper that we have full oversight and command of all of those decisions rather than having them delegated to unelected staff, especially in circumstances where there are manifestly inadequate oversight provisions to be able to see what has happened after those funds have been spent. There have been occasions where I've asked to inspect a copy of a contract that was entered into by staff on behalf of our community and was refused. There have been occasions where I have asked to inspect the procedures manual that underpins the procurement policy that we have put in place here and was refused. If unelected staff are able to spend our neighbours' money without any oversight as to how that's being done, then we would be abrogating our responsibility to be proper and thoughtful stewards of our neighbours' money. And for that reason, I think it is incumbent upon us to remove the temporary extensions to these delegations that were put in place at the start of a pandemic and return them back to the settings that they were at previously. And for that reason, I support Councillor Hamilton's motion and encourage other councillors to do so.
Thank you, councillors. I appreciate the desire to manage the budget and the funds of our town to the best of our ability. I don't think anybody would disagree with that sentiment. I would question some of the comments that have been made and the legitimacy of the comments.
How about it?
Excuse me.
How about it?
Councillor Wilson, it's out of order. Please do not again. So at the moment, the proposed amendment is only dealing with sole supplier spending. Our staff on a regular basis are making purchases on behalf of council that don't fall into the sole supplier arrangement, and we are happy for that to proceed. There is no amendment for that amount to be reduced at present. I don't see there being a specific need for the sole supplier to have a special arrangement. In terms of the comments about, I think it was manifestly inadequate oversight, I think that is a complete misrepresentation of the situation. Council makes budget decisions. We are also informed on a monthly basis if there is variation to the budget that we have already approved. We have an Audit and Governance Committee. We also have internal and external auditors that provide council with that oversight. It is not a requirement of councillors to inspect every single financial transaction that the town undertakes and question the legitimacy of it. I think we need to be careful about straying into operational areas, and some of the positions put forward I would suggest do so. What we do want to do is to promote efficiency and trust. So we all know that local government can be a very slow-moving beast. It's one of the frustrations for all of us in the room and for our community. And the only thing that this proposed amendment will achieve is reducing the efficiency and slowing down the processes that are already somewhat tedious. So I would encourage councillors to continue to have faith in our staff, have faith in the oversight processes that we have in place, so that we cannot place additional burden and time requirements that will delay projects that we want to deliver to our communities. So I would encourage councillors not to support the amendment and instead continue to allow the delegation to continue to proceed. Would anybody else like to speak? Councillor Hamilton, would you like to close?
Yes, please. From my perspective, this is not about trust at all. And I also would indicate that I don't believe that this would be delaying or creating extra time issues, because the sole supplier provision, as we've heard, has only been used two or three times in the last year. My desire for this to be brought before council for anything over 50,000, so between 50,000 and 250,000, is more the fact that sole supplier provisions are open to interpretation. And the interpretation that might be from one or two people might be different from the people around the council chamber. So this is a matter of interpretation. I think that when it comes to assault, all the other aspects of purchasing in the town are more or less covered off with a fair and equitable form of competitive trading. You know, you basically have competitive quotes, you have a competitive tender process. There's a whole range of ways in which different forms of purchasing under different values are handled. The sole supplier provision is pretty much a standalone type entity. It is subject to some wording along the lines of unique and unusual services that cannot be acquired elsewhere and things. There's a whole range of words there that are around this provision. It's the interpretation of those words that can be sometimes a little bit difficult. And that's why I would prefer, not because I distrust the staff, but because it's a matter of interpretation, I would prefer that these sole supplier provisions over a certain amount come before council through a group of people. And, you know, we are a council that prides itself on putting things out into the public forum, and I think this is something that is should be publicly available, this information. So I would prefer, not because I distrust the staff, but because I think it's good management practice to have oversight over these things. And that is it. It's as simple as that. Thank you.
Councillor Hamilton. Okay, so put that to the vote. Those in favour?
Councillor Wilson, Quinton, Barty and Hamilton, and against is Councillor McWilliam and McLennan. That is carried. 12.15, the quarterly report. Councillor Hamilton, did you want this one out?
I've only got one small query on this one. It is the very last resolution marked for deletion. And it's more a question. This was ROC 18/64877. It's on the very last page of the attachments. And I just wanted to know what happened with the trees. did anything ever happen in that space, or we just leased the place out again and they're all carrying on?
This is in relation to the Sparks.
Yes.
Facility.
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm sorry to bother you with this, but it's just a question.
Through Madam Mayor, Sparks, the operator, in the intervening period, sort of made arrangements to sort of make it more safe, and that seems to have been satisfactory. We've also been in communication with Sparks on the lease documentation and offered to assist and open up the go to help out with any sort of issue with the tree, but the minor sort of intervention that Sparks kind of took seemed to be working for the time being.
Great.
Thank you very much.
All right, a mover for the officer recommendation then. Councillor Hamilton, seconded. Councillor Barty, is there anyone against? So that's carried. I think I accidentally took 1216 out of one block, which was the common seal, and there was none. So happy to move that. Is there a seconded? Councillor Barty, anybody against? That is carried unanimously. 1217 is the calendar, so I believe that you needed to make an amendment to that.
That's correct. We currently have the Audit and Governance Committee scheduled for Wednesday the 1st of September at 5:30 p.m. We would like to suggest that move to the 15th of September at the same time to allow the tabling of the interim audit.
Okay, so I'm happy to move that. Is there a seconder? Councillor McWilliam, is there anybody against? So that is carried. There are no motions of which previous notice has been given. Are there any announcements of notices of motion for the next meeting? There's no urgent business, in which case we go on to confidential business. So we have a mover to go behind closed doors. Councillor Wilson, seconded. Councillor McWilliam. Is there anybody against? So that is carried.
Request a short bathroom break.
Oh, yes, sure. Thank you very much for your presence. Thank you, gentlemen. Yeah, let's have a 5-minute adjournment.